lyrically I'm untouchable, uncrushable. Running in a 600, running in a 600. Untouchable, uncrushable. Running in a 600, running in a 600.
Thank you for joining me on another edition here of Punch in the Face Radio. I'm your host, Brandon Stubbs. This week's show, we will be recapping and talking about World Series of Fighting 29, Invicta FC 16, and as well as the pay-per-view buys for UFC 196, which is incredible. But we're going to start off this week here in regards to news about Bellator 149. Now, unfortunately, this is an event that just will not escape our memory. You know, as we all watched in carnage, a horrifically bad event that had a lot of eyes on it in February here for Bellator down in Texas, down in Houston, Texas to be exact, that was headlined by main events of Royce Gracie versus Ken Shamrock and a long-awaited quote-unquote rematch, and Kimbo Slice versus Day-Day 5000. Now, the news broke this week, which I'm not really too surprised halfway about this. Now, news broke this week when the Texas State Athletic Commission released that they had two failures there in regards to the card. Ken Shamrock and Kimbo Slice both failed their drug test. Now, in Texas, they just do a flat urine test, no blood that was taken from what I can understand. Everything looks to be all tests that was conducted via urine samples. So, kind of surprised on that. Now, if anyone knows about the state of Texas and some of the weird things that go on there, you know, this is a very questionable commission with questionable people running it, questionable referees who get licensed, questionable fighters who get licensed there to fight, which, you know, I really wasn't too shocked when Bellator decided on Texas for this card, given the fact of Ken Shamrock, I want to say, is like 52 when the night of the fight. Royce is almost 50. Day-Day 5000 is a street fighter who has only had like a handful of pro MMA fights. Kimbo also in his 40s as well, but he has a little bit more of a resume in regards to MMA compared to Day-Day. So I was surprised that they, wasn't surprised that Texas allowed this to happen. Well, Ken Shamrock, this is actually his second failed steroids test. First since 2009, he failed a test back in California. This is the first from Kimbo that we know of. This been reported. Now, the weird thing is this. Typically in other states, when you fail a test, you're looking at, 6 months to a year suspension, relatively hefty fine. In Texas, with this being their first offense there in the state, both these gentlemen are looking at around a 90-day suspension and a $5,000 fine. Now, the reason why that's not really that big of a deal is the simple fact of neither guy is going to fight in the state of Texas in 90 days. That's not going to happen. We saw Kimbo Slice was barely able to walk out of the cage on his own power after the fight here at Bellator 149, so he definitely is not going to be in any sort of shape to fight again within a 90-day span. Ken Shamrock, on the other hand, was actually scheduled to be a part of a fight in Arizona, a part of UR Fights that's going to be on internet pay-per-view, but he ended up pulling out of that fight, so he's not going to be fighting in the next 90 days. The funny thing is with that, Ken ended up actually pulling up out of that fight here maybe about 5 or 6 days before the news broke of him failing the test in Texas. Now, did he have some inside track information and knew that this was going to happen and just wanted to remove himself from that card because he knew that he could have issues in the state of Arizona? It could also bring bad publicity to a really weird card itself. Trust me, we'll talk about the card here on next week's show. Did he know something and then he removed himself off of that card? Neither party has really made any comments here in regards to these tests. Neither has Bellator, for that matter. Bellator said, with them not being formally informed by the state of Texas, that they were refraining from comment. They were aware of the situation from the news that it broke, but until they get something officially from the state of Texas, they're not going to comment. So it will be interesting to see what sort of disciplinary actions Bellator takes with either one of these fighters. I highly doubt it. At 52, we see Ken Shamrock ever fight again in Bellator. I would hope not. And after that performance Kimbo Slice put on here, Bellator 149, hopefully we won't ever see him again either, because those fights were both horrifically bad fights that a lot of us watched, and we want that 3 hours of our life back that we said and watched Bellator 149. So, still making news even weeks later is Bellator 149. What a sick, sad shame that is. But something that wasn't, you know, let's kind of get on a positive note. We had fights here this weekend. We had fights here from Invicta. Invicta FC 16 went down from the Tropicana Trinidad Pavilion there in Las Vegas. You know, it was a really good card for Invicta. Invicta, this is their second card here of 2016, excuse me. Pretty much they're going to be looking to be doing fights here. Every other month is kind of the pattern they're kind of shooting for at least six events here this year. We may possibly get one more, but at least they have six that they have slated and they want to do this year. The card was headlined by two title fights. Hopefully I'm not saying her name right, but Akaki Humasaki. Homosaki, hopefully I enunciated that right. She retained her atomweight championship belt, beating Amber Brown. You know, Amber Brown was touted to go in and win. A lot of people just thought she was going to kind of, you know, proverbially bully herself through the fight. Her nickname is The Bully, for those who don't know. But a lot of people saw that happening, and the veteran Homosaki just didn't really allow that to happen. She was able to score a third round armbar submission win over Brown. You know, Brown definitely looked really, really heartbroken about the loss, but she's still young and she still has a lot of career in front of her, so I don't want her to get too down about that. I thought she put on a good performance given the fact of what she was going up against. A lot of people here in the States don't know about Homosaki. Definitely a very solid international fighter who we just got to get a lot more familiar with here in the States, but definitely is not a upset win for her beating Amber Brown. So Homosaki was able to retain her atomweight championship. Now, the other championship fight on the card was a interim flyweight championship fight. Now, the current champion, Barbara Honchak, is currently out for Invicta. They hope to have her back at some point here in 2016. They're really not sure. So in the meantime, instead of having the belt just kind of hang out there, they put out a flyweight championship interim fight for that. Now, that fight was Vanessa Porto versus Jennifer Maia, and it was an interesting fight. The fight ended up going to the cards with Jennifer Maia able to capture the championship. It should be a very interesting next couple of months for her, seeing, you know, if they decide to, you know, have her defend the belt right away, if they, you know, plan on kind of holding her out till later this year and seeing what happens with Barb. So, I mean, it's a very interesting scenario right now for Jennifer Maia, but, you know, she's happy being the champion, scoring that unanimous decision win. Other fighters who definitely looked well in their fights, Angela Hill. Angela Hill, this is now her second fight with the Bellator banner, able to score a second round TKO win over Stephanie Eklund. You know, for Angela Hill, this is a rebirth for her. She didn't really seem to be a complete fighter when she was there with the UFC. We didn't really get a chance to see her perform to maybe her fullest potential. But now in these two fights, we've seen her underneath the Bellator, underneath the Invicta banner. Whoa. Underneath the Invicta banner, she's looked so much better. She almost seems a lot more relaxed going into these fights. Now for her, you got to assume that she may be a win or two away from, you know, definitely challenging and being in a title picture there for Invicta. Definitely a face to for them to look forward to going forward there for the organization, because she is, you know, she's definitely somebody you can build around. Like I said, she's starting to seem more and more comfortable there in the cage underneath the Invicta banner. So, you know, definitely good for her. I definitely think she's going to have a bright future ahead for her there with Invicta. Another person who's, you know, definitely seemed like they've had a rebirth in their career is Roxanne Modafferi. She was able to score a split decision win over Deanna Bennett. You know, Roxanne's another one of those fighters that coming over to Invicta has definitely breathed life in her career. She, you know, had some skids, had some losses, and just really since she's came with Invicta these last few years, we've seen her develop and just look like a completely different fighter there underneath that banner, and getting wins and her striking looking so much more improved. You know, she's one of those, she definitely feels that she wants a title fight next. She wants to be fighting for a championship, her next fight out there for Invicta. So gotta love her spirit, gotta love her style. Like I said, man, she goes all out every fight and is definitely improving each time out. So we'll see what happens with her there in 125-pound division and see if she gets a crack at a title fight her next time out. You know, also, former guest here on Punch to the Face Radio, Ashley Greenway, was able to pick up her first career victory here as a pro. against Sarah Click. So definitely a shout out to Ashley for getting that first pro win, making her pro debut. I was a little bit shaky there in the first round, but she was able to definitely take control there in the second and third, and I thought she did a great job. So congratulations to Ashley on getting that first pro win. We'll definitely be seeing more of her there on the Evicta cards. You know, one other fight to note was Sarah Delano versus Andrea Lee. Now, Andrea Lee was still a very highly touted prospect. She did suffer a loss via rear naked choke in the third round to Sarah. You know, it was a step up in competition for Lee. It was a huge step up in competition for her. But to her credit, she took the fight, you know, took the challenge that was ahead of her. She fought well, but, you know, the veteran definitely was able to pull it out there in the end with the choke in the third round. So, big shout-out to both of those ladies who put on a hell of a performance, I thought. So, but we'll look for Invicta to be coming back here, more than likely here sometime in the spring. Like I said, every other month is what they kind of have the pattern of doing here for 2016. So, we'll be looking forward to breaking news in regards to Invicta 17 here later this year. So the ladies kind of set the tone for the weekend with their fight card on Fight Pass on Friday. Saturday we had World Series of Fighting 29 that went down from Colorado. Justin Gaethje, a guy who we have ranked here in our top 10 pound for pound or punch for pound list at punchtotheface.com. He proved why he's among that top 10. Typically, we see him go out and just have these really rough-looking slugfest fights. You know, the guy was... you know, a college wrestler, and we very rarely ever see him using his grappling at all. We'd very rarely see him taking the fight down to the ground or anything like that. He just stands and bangs. Well, this time around, he fought an extremely smart fight, kept his distance, and actually just leg kick Brian Foster into submission. He was working that low kick, and finally, Brian Foster's knee just kind of gave way. Right now, there's still no word exactly on the extent of the injury. You know, during the broadcast, Chael Sonnen had thought, you know, maybe it was just like severe Charlie horse, but it looks to be a lot more major than that, because we saw Foster get actually carried out of the ring with assistance from his corner, so he was able to put no weight on that leg at all. So, you know, Gaethje just added a different wrinkle to his game that we didn't see with those low kicks and actually retain his lightweight championship. Now, for him, there's really not much left in the way of contenders. One thing he did do after the fight, he did call out lightweight contender there for World Series of Fighting in Jason Hyde. Now, Jason Hyde recently signed last year with World Series of Fighting. He was able to have one fight here with them, was able to pull out a victory. So, I mean, he's really the only legit contender I can say that's left there for Justin Gaethje to fight. Now, one thing that Justin did say throughout the week when he was out promoting the fight and doing different shows is he doesn't want to take a pay cut just to be in the UFC. World Series of Fighting has treated him well, so he's not in a rush to up and leave them to go to the UFC. So you never know. I mean, he still plans on being there and fighting and defending that title, so more power to him. But looks like Jason Hyde is the guy that's on his radar. That should be a very interesting fight, given the fact that Jason Hyde is more of a definitely a grappler and will definitely try to use his wrestling and not try to stand up with Justin Gaethje. And we'll may have to... May force Justin's hand, and force him to actually use more of his wrestling, not so much as a defensive mechanism, but actually do some offense with it. So that should be an interesting fight that we will more than likely see here at some point here later this year when World Series of Fighting has their next set of events. Now, they're going to be back here in April, but no, definitely won't see them then. They have cards in June and September as well, so it could be something we see here late summer or early fall. Other guys on the card who actually kind of made an impact. Lewis Taylor defeated Corey DeVello via a guillotine choke in the first round. Very, very strange, very quickly how this fight ended. Corey pretty much rushed in for the takedown, and Lewis was ready, locked in the guillotine choke. Choked him out in 29 seconds officially, but you could tell Corey was out way before that. And Lewis said in the post-fight, you know, he felt bad that he kept it on longer than he needed to, but he had to wait for the ref to stop the fight. He didn't want to let the hold go and then Corey pop up and, you know, try to fight him back. So, definitely interesting for him. You know, for Taylor, he definitely said that, you know, he's here. Corey was looked upon as being a top contender there in the middleweight division. He's now beat him, and now he's going to want a crack at that belt. Now, who knows when that actually may happen, because your middleweight champion is David Branch, who's also your light heavyweight champion for World Series of Fighting. So he's going to be making a title defense here at April 2nd. Doubt if he can turn around relatively quick and make another title defense that soon after that. So Lewis may have to wait a little bit to get his crack at the middleweight title. Really, the only other fight on the card that was really noteworthy is definitely the finish and the knockout by Brandon Rivella. Hopefully I'm understanding that right, against Danny Maness. Brandon hit him with he was going for a high kick, and it was more of his knee that hit the face instead of the shin or his foot, and knocked Danny out. It was relatively amazing, that kick that he landed, knocked him out there in the first round. Definitely made an impact there on the card, so that was interesting. That was fun to watch. But, you know, overall in the card, is very, definitely the prelims had a lot of exciting fights, had a lot of finishes. Not too many of the fights on the card end up going the full three rounds. It also showcased a lot of local talent there in the state of Colorado, which I don't think a lot of people understand. The state of Colorado actually has a lot of MMA gyms there. A lot of fighters go up there and train in elevation, helps out their cardio. And it's actually starting to become more of a talent-rich state with guys getting recognition, getting an opportunity, and I'm glad the World Series of Fighting featured some of those fighters there while they were in the state of Colorado. And not to mention, it filled the arena. You know, they were the arena was packed at the prelims. Like, it was typically when you see these cards, especially for World Series of Fighting cards, you don't really see the arena start filling up until right when the main card's going to go live on NBC Sports. In this case, you know, when I was watching online, it was filled the second fight into the prelims. So definitely a major thing there for them. But like I said, World Series of Fighting will be back at it now here on April the 2nd when they're going to have, David Branch will be defending his championship belt there against, Starks. He's going to be defending his belt against Starks. I forget his first name, but he's going to be Clifford Starks. That's who he's going to be defending his belt against there at World Series of Fighting 30. That'll be in Las Vegas. Only other fight announced for that card is a vacant welterweight championship bout between John Finch and Zoe Zefranero. Hopefully I'm not saying that right. I probably just butchered it. Now, Finch is actually fighting in that fight because Jake Shields ended up having some issues contractually with World Series of Fighting. So Finch is not going to be facing Zefranero instead of Jake Shields. So, interesting. And you know, everybody knows the welterweight belt is vacated after Ruslan Palaharas was pretty much suspended and stripped of his belt by the World Series of Fighting. I honestly doubt we ever see Ruslan Palaharas fight again in the States. Definitely won't probably fight again for the World Series of Fighting after the suspension. So, odd circumstances there. So, Fitch now fights for the belt vacated and stripped of Ruslan Palaharas. Like I said, David Branch and Clifford Starks for the middleweight championship. So that's all that's announced for that. But one would think we get more information on that soon. And obviously we'll have that on the show as the World Series of Fighting gets the rest of that card up and running. Now, next week we will definitely be talking about, like I said, as I mentioned earlier, UR fights. If you're not familiar with this, definitely go to punchtothefaceto.com. And I kind of have a rundown of what this card is. But it's an eclectic mix of fuckery. That's maybe the best way of describing it. You'll have a MMA match with Dan Severin and Tank Abbott, who's Tank Abbott's replacing Ken Shamrock, as I mentioned earlier here on the fight. So he's going to be replacing Tank Abbott's replacing Ken Shamrock against Dan Severin in an MMA rules bout. You have, in a grappling match, and probably the most legit match on the whole card, Chael Sonnen versus Michael Bisping. Now, this is a straight grappling match. Quite honestly, I'm surprised the UFC is letting Michael Bisping do this. I'm still shocked. Now, keep in mind that as we do the show, we're a week out from the fight actually happening. I still wonder if this is actually going to go down. As well on the card, you're going to have what's being labeled as a final match for both these competitors. Kurt Angle and Rey Mysterio Jr., both former WWE champions, long-time competitors in pro wrestling, and in Kurt's case, also an Olympic gold medalist. They're going to have a pro wrestling battle, like I said, it's dubbed as being their final matches for both these gentlemen. And then lastly, it was originally supposed to be Roy Jones Jr. fighting a fan. Instead, the Arizona Athletic Commission, thankfully, said, no, it has to, you can't just fight some guy off the street. It has to be somebody with some sort of combat sports or at least MMA or boxing history or resume. So, in turn, UR Fights found and has signed a gentleman out of Canada to actually face Roy Jones Jr. So they found the gentleman by the name of Veron Phillips. Now, Veron is actually an MMA fighter, like I said, fights out of Canada. I want to say he's originally from, like, Michigan. He's 5-3 as a pro MMA fighter. So he's the guy who's now scheduled to fight Roy Jones Jr. Now, the whole catch with this was supposed to be, you know, if a fan would fight Roy and possibly win $100,000 if the fan was able to beat Roy. I'm not sure how this all breaks down now with, you know, MMA fighter now being put in there to fight Roy. One thing I have to say this, again, as we record this, from what I understand, from all my intel I've gotten and reached out to people, none of this stuff has actually been formally licensed from the Arizona State Athletic Commission. So Roy hasn't gotten his license yet, from what I understand. And keep in mind, the 47-year-old future Hall of Famer, last time we saw him, he was getting knocked out cold and face-planted in Moscow in a boxing match. So not sure if he's even going to be able to get a license. That's one. Two, not sure if they're going to give him a boxing license to face a MMA fighter. So the MMA fighter may not even get a license to do this. Again, it's kind of the same thing even with Tank Abbott and Dan Severin. Tank Abbott's 50, Dan Severin's 57. I don't know who's going to actually license either one of those gentlemen at their age. So we don't know. We have no idea. As far as it stands now, neither one of these guys have actually been cleared for their licensing for any of this. So, like I said, next week's show we'll have more information if this is something that actually happens. It's just a strange thing all the way around. So yeah, definitely if you want information about it, definitely go check out punchtheface.com where we have some more story behind that. So yeah, strangeness that happens in combat sports. What can you do? To kind of close out the show here, kind of recap a little bit more about UFC 196. Now, 196, you know, it's still kind of the event that shocked the world, you know, with Holly Holm getting choked out in the third round by Miesha Tate, and Tate now being the new women's bantamweight champion. We had Conor McGregor fighting a late-notice replacement in Nate Diaz, and Diaz beating him and choking him out in the second round. You know, but now we've gotten some numbers behind some things, and the numbers are good for all parties involved. Let's first start with the pay-per-view buys. Now, the early indication is, and these numbers may rise a little bit, but the early numbers are 1.5 million pay-per-view buys for the UFC for UFC 196. That is a huge number. Put this into kind of context that, you know, boxing is pay-per-view king. You know, they have, you know, maybe the most touted out of all of them. Just look at a guy like Floyd Mayweather. That's what he always hollers about is his numbers. So doing a million buys on pay-per-view is huge. That's a feat that's not always obtainable. Not everybody can consistently do that. Like I said, look at Floyd Mayweather. He's really about the only guy who can consistently put up high numbers or close to a million buys. Most typical UFC cards, they're going to range anywhere from 450 to around, you know, topping off around 850,000. Just really depends on who you get your numbers from, because these numbers are never officially released by the UFC. So you got to kind of take these numbers a lot with a grain of salt. In regards to their, you know, the typical buys, but it's typically around that range. And, you know, you're going to bottom out around 450,000, you know, top cards top out, you know, around 850,000. So just using that as a rough gauge, using that number, you know, 1.5 million is huge. It's a huge, huge buy, especially given the fact of your main event changed the week of the pay-per-view. Your preliminary, you know, your really your rest of your main card minus Tate and Holm was awful. That really, on paper, you looked at these and said, why are these guys even on the pay-per-view portion of the card? So there was that. You know, Tate and Holmes didn't do as much publicity or PR or do interviews compared to, you know, most normal cards or most title fights for that matter. I mean, they were the only title fight then on the card, and you didn't see them doing that much media. You know, they kind of pushed them a little bit more as the time went on, but you didn't see them overly hyping it or doing more interviews than they do typically with their fights. I think Holmes did a lot more interviews and media with her fight with Ronda Rousey than she did here with Miesha Tate. And I do think Tate kind of did a little bit more than her normal, but still it was a little bit light for both of them, given the circumstances. Like I said, you had Nate Diaz replacing Rafael Dos Anjos week of the fight subsequently. And you only got a press conference and some sound bites here and there from both Connor and Nate. But, you know, given that short amount of time, given the factors and names involved, 1.5 million buys is ridiculous. What makes it even better for the fighters is these guys and ladies in the beginning, numbers as we call them, back-end pay off of pay-per-view buys. So obviously what that means is this. They get a percentage or so many cents or so many dollars on each pay-per-view buy that actually happens. So with 1.5 million at least being that number that's out there, we're hearing numbers that Nate Diaz made at least $3.5 million on top of his actual payout. We're hearing, you know, rumors about Conor McGregor doing around $10 million for his. The ladies, you know, probably doing close to, you know, over six figures, close to an extra million or so of themselves, if not more. It really depends on the way that works out. But, you know, those are huge numbers, you know, $3.5 million, close to 10 for Conor. You know, these number ranges, this is starting to get a little bit crazy. And this pay-per-view here, UFC 196, could possibly change a lot of things going forward. Now, if the UFC can carry this momentum into UFC 197, headlined by Jon Jones and Daniel Cormier in their second bout, you know, it could get crazy for them. And, I mean, we could start seeing the payouts maybe being close to what we see and what we hear about a lot of times boxers getting. You know, we hear a lot of people complaining about fighters' payouts. You know, if they're putting up numbers like this for your headline guys, it's going to be on par with what boxers are getting. So this should be real interesting. Now, we'll close it out here with the audio of the week of Nate Diaz. Well, I'm going to throw some confused with Nate Diaz when he was on TMZ. Just being, well, being a Diaz brother. So we'll leave you with that audio here to close the show. Make sure, as always, you follow me on Twitter, punch_2TheFace. And as well at punchtheface.com. And if you have any questions, comments, want to drop me a line about anything, feel free to email me at brandon@punchtheface.com. Next week's show, we'll be joined by bantamweight contender Raquel Rocky Pennington. Has a lot the same regards to what the women's bantamweight division is, because trust me, it is a mess right now. And we get Rocky's opinion on that as she gets ready to fight Betch Kohea down in Tampa, at part of UFC on Fox in April 16th. So definitely got some good comments from her in regards to the bantamweight division. So make sure you check that out here on next week's show. And also make sure as well you check out here this week's boxing podcast, The Burn, that will also drop here later this week with my comments in regards to Showtime's schedule here for this spring. And my unfiltered comments, if you will. I'll just leave it at that. That's called a teaser here in the media industry. So again, here, audio of the week here is Nate Diaz on TMZ. So courtesy to TMZ of this audio. Until next week, I'm out.
I would say that Justin Bieber has hits, and you know, I thought he did. I thought, man, that fool.